I talk about flag theory, the passports, the citizenship, the residences as a security model. Because many of my clients are Bitcoiners, I can make a comparison. Look, if you travel, you optimize for being able to cross borders with your Bitcoin. If you have kids and you're not in good health, you're optimizing for inheritance protocols. You build out those custody systems for your particular goals and needs. We've been going in cycles. That's a normal thing as a nation state too, or as a society. I feel like we might go through such a significant change in the fourth turning that we're part of right now. Usually at the end of it, the maps get redrawn quite a bit and the power game board gets redrawn.
Welcome back to the Adam O'Brien Show, where we are in pursuit of objective truth on a mission to inspire the next generation. Today, I am joined by Katie the Russian, one of the true beauties in the space. She has done amazing work talking about sovereignty as far as your nationality go. We dive into, as it won't surprise anyone to learn, spiritual beliefs and her Russian Orthodox upbringing into now orange pilling her church and realizing all the Bitcoiners that go to her church where she lives now in Austin. And a whole host of other topics. She's a brand new mom, mom of three, but just had a baby a few months ago. And so super pumped for this one. Please stick around to the end. And you definitely don't want to miss this one. So let's jump straight into it.
You start Plan B. You sell to Citizen X. Now still CMO at Citizen X. Here running the booth at BitBlock Boom. A 2 month old, literally downstairs. Planning on homeschooling. Walk me through what an average, like what is this? All the different compartments in your head. I run compartments in my head, at least anyways, the family, the golf, the entrepreneur, the dad, the husband, all of it. You've got way more compartments than I do, it seems like. How are you managing all this?
A friend of mine with eight kids said, bite more than you can chew and figure out how to chew it.
Cool.
And I feel like that's what it is. So it's my first time that I actually had maternity leave, right? Before I was a business owner. So
Cool.
Typed things. Yeah. 2 days postpartum. Nobody knew that I'm on maternity leave. But this time I sold my business to Citizen X and they were like, Katie, take your time. And 2 months in, I was like, I don't think I can go back to work. Like nothing works. I don't have time. I can barely get
like at the business, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then I slowly started throwing things back in and I'm like, okay, I was able to get 3 workouts this week. Okay. I actually, you know, did some work and then it speeds up and as long as you just keep going and now it seems like I'm totally back doing work, doing conferencing, having a baby, breastfeeding for like
a couple months in.
He's just working out again.
Sweet. Yeah. Do you think is this part of your like you okay, yeah. And remind me your origin. You grew up in Russia. You come to America
at the age of 21.
Oh, 21. Okay. So you were raised in Russia. And during this time, you said at the age of 21, I think we're about the same age. So you kind of watched like USSR really come through.
Yeah. So I was born right after the fall of USSR, basically.
Wow.
So I grew up in a post-Soviet country where basically the only path to success was entrepreneurship. So, you know, like in an American dream, you find a career, you just grow up, like go up the ladder. This is not a thing. I think it's still not a thing in Russia, like going up the ladder and getting somewhere. It's like, yeah, you're going to get 20% higher salary in 20 years.
Wow.
So it's like.
But are there free market paths to entrepreneurship? Like, can you create and innovate?
Absolutely.
Really? So it's kind of free market. So why isn't there that free market economics for like the employee level?
Yeah, I can't figure that out. I think in the post-Soviet space, there was so much space to start and build, but not that much jobs, like employment need yet. So I don't know. Salaries are still not where I would want to be.
In Russia. Mm-hmm. Okay, still.
Still, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I'm sure there are exceptions, but working like a low-level employee for an American company would already be a higher salary than working like a C-level position in most Russian.
And are you able to do that? Like tax-wise, regime-wise, you're able to...
Well, first of all, nobody speaks English.
So I'm probably pretty tough.
And... Yeah. But those that do and they're able to find employment because paperwork-wise, it wasn't that hard until the war started.
Like once, the Ukraine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Once the war started...
Are there still sanctions on Russia today?
SWIFT is not working.
Okay.
The system is completely cut off the rest of the world. So there were lots of Russian employees working for Western companies, But yeah, since the war started,
they can't get paid.
Laid off. They either had to move out of Russia or wow. find different.
So are even Russian citizens? I'm like so ignorant. As a Canadian, we kind of just live up with our maple syrup, our moose on the street. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's wars going on, but we're all living in La La Land. Do the sanctions actually affect the employees themselves? Or, like, sorry, obviously they affect them, but can you still hire a Russian employee even through sanctions? Or is it just sending them money that's the problem?
You can. Usually it's done through like third-party providers.
Oh, okay.
Like some yeah. company in Serbia will hire a Russian and then contract them.
I see. Yeah, okay.
Staffing or whatever it's
called. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I think actually we have similar. We've been looking into, we've hired a few Americans now. And so we, I think we cheat and just pay them as contractors. But I think it's coming where we're going to have to start figuring out what the US laws look like. What, so coming over from Russia, how do you feel like the culture was different coming in? Because you obviously seen the, or growing up post Soviet and seeing the fall of, well, I don't know, a state.
Socialism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was definitely a huge cultural gap. Like
from America to...
From Russia to America, yeah. So I grew up in Russia. I did travel a lot because I was an athlete. So we would go to Spain, Italy a lot for like World Cups and Europe Cups. But I never really interacted with the culture of people outside of Russia. And I didn't speak the language. Until the age of 20, like...
Oh, so you're so you didn't learn English until you were 20? Until you started planning to come over to America?
Yeah, so 6 months before coming to the U.S., because I was considering going to school here.
Okay.
And I was transferring from my university to the U.S. That was the goal originally. So 6 months before coming here, I started learning the language. And then I got here, like, it was probably my fastest learning possible. I spent like 6 to 8 hours a day specifically learning the language.
Wow.
And probably like 3 hours a day watching whatever show in English.
Yeah. What did you watch? What was your go-to? Was it garbage like sitcom or were you like learning? Yeah, okay. Garbage.
So like the Ellen Show is something I was watching because those were different accents, different people every time. And I would just like watch clips.
Oh, so you're strategic in how you did it.
Oh, yeah, totally. But then I found Lost TV show, which I really got into. And I
Lost? Did you like the ending?
I learned. Well, it's super weird. But doesn't matter. I learned the language. Then I was rewatching the shows that I already watched in Russian. So that would be Prison Break.
Okay. Oh, I binged Prison Break about a year ago. So good.
Really good.
Easy to binge.
Yeah.
That was back when TV was like weekly and they had cliffhangers every week. They relied on you actually having to tune in, not the Netflix like rush you into the next episode after an episode.
So we were fans of this show. My dad watched it probably 3 times. My sister did too. I watched it in Russian, then I watched it in English. And obviously, I was always a huge fan of Mike, right? And recently, my sister's turning it on to rewatch, and my niece, her daughter is like, wait, that's Katie's husband. I'm like, what? So apparently they look alike.
Okay.
According to my niece.
I've never met your husband, but that's really funny. Is this his sister, his family's side or your?
No, my family.
Okay,
side.
Wow. Yeah, Mike's a boss. So your husband's American?
Yeah.
Okay, so is this what drove you to like Flag Theory was finally like moving the your life over here?
Well, not really. So at the age of 21, I come to the US and like my whole life, I absolutely love my family. We are super close with my parents, with my sister. So
were you living that with them still at 21? Like you were still in school?
No, I was studying in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
But before moving to the US, I came back for the summer and like we do everything together. We're a very strong family. And it was never a question to me if I was going to have a family. It was like a given. And then I moved to America and everybody's child free. And I'm like, wait a second. I never even thought of it. Am I child free? So like for the first 6 months in the US, I was like, maybe I could not have kids just because I've never thought of it before. Quickly, I came to my senses. But yeah, at first I was just a single immigrant. I met my husband about 5.5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on the first date, we basically talked through like, this is what we want from family. Like,
did he initiate that or did you? You seem like a strong-willed woman.
We met at a Bitcoin meetup.
Okay, so nice. The Bitcoiners, when they get together, it's. I feel like it's the Bitcoiners and the Christians. I'm in a community group where I live now, and we've got a guy there, and he's like desperately wanting to have a wife and start his family and have kids. And he's like, he seems like a very intense dude. I can just imagine him being in the dating pool. And like you said, first date. And in Kelowna, where I live, it's quite a superficial. It's a very small, like, summer beach town. And so it's, you know, it's a bunch of plastic, like, people walking around and very superficial, and everyone with their boats and all this stuff. And so to live in this environment is quite challenging. And yeah, I don't know if you feel the same way. How long have you been married?
5 years.
Okay, so you met your husband 5.5 years ago?
Yeah.
Married 5 years. I love this so much. I'm very similar. I told my wife, I think like less than 3 weeks after I met her, I told her I was going to marry her, and she thought I was crazy. And I guess I am a little bit crazy, but and we did. And we've been married now 12 years and almost 13.
Yeah, I think similar timelines, like around a month, and we were like, so is that it? Yeah, seems like that.
Yeah, it's go time. But I can't imagine being in kind of the dating pool right now. It feels like things have shifted, even in the last 5 years. Like, I've been out of the dating pool for like a decade and a half. So I never had Tinder, never had a dating app. But how have you seen the shift kind of since like the COVID era?
So I don't have single friends.
Okay, interesting.
I have single sister-in-law, and that's my only entry.
This is your husband's sister?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
She's really cool. She works for a Bitcoin company as a developer too.
Whoa. Are we like farming her out right now? Is this
I'm like looking around like who would look good with Steffi? But yeah, she's my only like entry into dating pool, what's going on. And like, she's my sister-in-law. She's not going to share everything.
Totally.
But yeah, I have no idea what's going on there, and I'm pretty glad.
Yeah, big time. How do you have a sister-in-law that works? I feel like there's so few women that actually work in the Bitcoin space, and part of your bloodline, I suppose, is in this space. What's up there?
Well, my husband used to contribute to Core, so
okay.
He kind of...
You married an OG. Nice.
She basically self-taught developer, so he brought her into the software world. She was a biochem before. And I don't know, one day she quit her job, and I was like, just tweet about it. Just tweet that you're looking for a job. And, you know, put your entire CV on Twitter and it's going to go. She does that. It goes viral. And she gets,
come on,
Bitcoin company.
That's kind of similar to you, actually, Halston, behind the camera. You had a similar kind of experience with the posting on Twitter. Twitter is a great, an amazing networking place, especially for the Bitcoiners who are looking for, at work, I optimize. So through COVID, I went hyper, like, this is garbage and I want to rebel. And I wanted to rebel in such a way that was going to be like not going to cause harm to myself or my family, but in a way that was going to like. And so we closed the office at first for about 2 weeks. I was like, oh, this feels really serious. Like, bodies in the streets are a big deal. We're going to have zombies walking around. Like, I was one of the guys, generator. I bought like 100 or like 1,000 liters of gas. I bought 4 guns, like enough ammo to, you know, look after the whole thing. And then I was like, where are the bodies? Like, how come I'm not driving over? The morgues aren't full. Like, what's going on? I was like, oh, it's a scam. Of course it's a scam. And so after that, we like opened up the office, and I was very much like, we're working in office, and we didn't do the mask charade, and we were scaling up like crazy. This is when Bitcoin was going public. And so we're scaling up like crazy. People are like walking in for interviews, which they're already like super uncomfortable, like masked up. Like, I'm just ripping around like nothing's going on, because really nothing was going on. But I optimized for hiring in the postal code, because I think part of it was the in-person culture was very important, is very important, but I discounted how important the Bitcoiner culture was. And so we scaled up to like 80 people or something like this from 10. So it was through COVID, scaling up like crazy. And I completely lost hold of the culture because we didn't optimize for this Bitcoiner angle. We optimized for talent and postal code rather than, you know, talent and core values. And I found myself week after week explaining why Bitcoin was important to the people working on our, like, we have got a very, there's like Bitcoin companies, like, I wouldn't even call it, like, you know, Coinbase and like all these other ones, which aren't, they're fintech companies best. And then there's Bitcoin Well, which is like this like non-custodial, you know, Bitcoin platform. And there's two very different things, two very different missions. And having to explain why Bitcoin is important to the people working on this product, I found myself very, it was obviously very challenging. And so we scrapped that. We had to scale down during the bear market post 2021, the FTX crash. And then we end up hiring and optimizing for Bitcoin talent. And now the culture is alive, like getting together with a bunch of Bitcoiners, talking about Bitcoin. You don't have to ask. I feel so lucky because the Bitcoiners want to come and they want to come and work. You're not just hiring a job. And so I also feel like there's a unique sense of optimism throughout the Bitcoiners. Another one of our core values. How have you seen that transpire through your family? Like you, Marion, core developer, sister-in-law working in Bitcoin. You guys are a Bitcoiner family. You live in Austin. Like this is like, you're the running the American Bitcoin dream. How does this transpire into like family values and ways that you run through?
I feel like his family was on Bitcoin values before Bitcoin was a thing.
Cool.
So that was seen through right away. Like before I knew his sister, before I knew his family, like by small things, I would like, oh, they do this thing. That's pretty cool.
What's one that stands out to you right now?
Well, first of all, his mom hasn't drank alcohol in 30 years.
Wow.
My mom hasn't drank alcohol in 30 years.
For which reason? What's the...
No reason.
Just... Okay. Not good for you.
Yeah. I've never tried alcohol in my life.
Really?
Other than at church.
Okay. Like the wine for communion.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Interesting.
And that was also new because my pastor, he's going to be here. I asked him, like, I keep drinking grape juice. He's like, you shouldn't.
Okay, talk to me about this. Because I also, at our church, I think we just dip it in the juice. And I always opt for the juice. And okay, my pastor always says, there's wine and juice, choose according, or heed your conscience. He says the same thing every single time. And I've never asked, but just on Easter, I kind of thought, okay, so talk to me about this. Why did your pastor say that?
Basically, he says, Jesus said that's wine.
Do you think the wine was the same in the Bible as it is today? Like, what are they buying? Copper Moon, like $8 bottle of wine, dump it in the communion cup and off they go. Is that the same as what, like, Jesus is crushing grapes and letting it sit there for 2 months?
I mean, the technology is deflationary, so maybe they came up with a way doing good wine right now. And I don't know. All the wine I drank was at the communion. I had no idea what's good wine.
Yeah, no, it feels like tastes like. And it just said it pairs well with a little bit of bread.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just asked my pastor. You can ask him. He's going to be here as a Bitcoin.
Yes, I will.
He's the founder of Magnolia Foundation, which is, he's teaching churches about Bitcoin.
Okay, sweet. I think it was Magnolia, or maybe we chatted about Magnolia. Is he from Utah?
He is in Utah right now. Tim Fox.
Okay, yeah. I talked to, what's your pastor's called?
Tim Fox.
Yeah.
He used to be the pastor at my church. He left to pursue Magnolia.
Okay, sweet.
This is another funny thing. I walk into a church. We just moved to Austin.
Yeah, so even your pastor is a Bitcoiner? Right? Just put this together.
I walk into church and it's a Presbyterian church. I've never been to Presbyterian church. I don't know the rules. Like, I still feel this imposter syndrome with churches. And I sit there at the last row and like it's a meet and greet time. And pastor just comes to me and I'm like, what did I do wrong? Was I supposed to cover my head like an Orthodox? I don't know. And he comes to me. He's like, are you Katie from Twitter? And I was like, what?
No, absolutely not.
So yeah, he's a Bitcoiner himself too. And then he's
and like, he followed you on Twitter.
Yeah. He's like, did Paul bring you? And I'm like, Paul who? He's like, Paul's a Lightning developer.
At your church? Okay, this is the most base church in all of America.
We have lots of Bitcoiners at church. Like,
wow.
Easter Sunday, I walk in and I'm like, okay, everybody's here. Like, quite a few people from my church right now here at this conference, and we go to church together.
I am blown away at hearing this.
Yeah. Austin is pretty cool.
Yeah, Austin sounds like a vibe. Maybe I'll have to come check out this Bitcoiner church. I want to talk about the overlap between Bitcoin and Jesus is just like, I've completely transitioned one of my presentations to this concept that your Bitcoin journey just leads you to Jesus. That's kind of like, that's the end finish line for, I think, all Bitcoiners on a long enough time scale. But before that, did you go to church in Russia?
No.
Oh.
Post-Soviet country.
Right.
Atheist.
What is the religion in, is it just atheism?
Orthodox Christianity.
In Russia right now. But what about
pre-fall of USSR.
It's just like, just the state. The state is God.
Yeah, no, people were put in jail for being religious. Like, that was a thing during Nazism.
Yeah.
So my grandpa is like still absolutely strongly atheistic.
Oh, interesting.
My dad is too.
Wow.
So at the age of 12.
Even 25, 30 years post, and they're so they have the freedom to explore now.
Yeah.
To support Christianity, but they're just the ideas were beat into them as a child. And
basically, okay. My dad is still like, well, this is a scam.
Wow.
My mom is like, I know there's something, but I'm so uneducated on religion. I don't know where to start.
Are they both back in Russia?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they spent quite a bit of time in El Salvador these days, and I'm hoping that they will move there. At the age of 12, I'm like, let me look into church. And I discover...
Such a curious thing to do as a 12-year-old.
I know. I discover a Sunday school from a Protestant church. Protestant religion doesn't exist in Russia. How did I stumble upon this particular church with Sunday school? Well, anyway, I started going there.
Wow.
So I was going there mostly for like, okay, it seems interesting. Let me learn more.
And your parents were cool. Like they had to drive you and drop you off. And
yes.
Okay.
So every Sunday, my dad would be like, what are you doing?
Go play with the fairy tale kids.
But it's like, you're not going to tell your child, oh, it's bad, don't go to church. Like, it's not totally. Something you, how do you say it? You put me on a house arrest.
Right. People. Yeah, yeah. Ground them.
Yeah.
Grounding, yeah.
Ground me for going to church.
Right. Imagine.
Not the worst thing your daughter could do, right? So he would still drop me off, but every Sunday would be like a talk. So I touched things there, was singing in choir because I liked singing, but still it never really computed for me. Like I knew the stories, I learned some stories. It didn't, like I still feel so uneducated on religion, to be fair. But back then I was already like, I don't know anything. I'm still sitting here trying to put pieces together and there's no adult next to me,
yeah.
You know, explaining things to me at home. So, but at the age of 20, I really felt the call and I got baptized into Orthodox at the Orthodox Church.
In Russia.
Wow. My birthday. Because in Orthodox, you can only get baptized on certain days that are your name days.
Okay.
And like this is
your name days.
What it is. My name day was on my 20th birthday. And it was the only weekend I was in my hometown.
What is a name day? What is the...
It's like, there are different saints in Orthodox. So there's Saint Ekaterina, and that's my name. So you can only get baptized on that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, and it fell onto my birthday, and I was like, this is special. This is what it is.
Yeah.
So I got baptized. I asked my aunt to be my godmother. My dad didn't come, but I didn't really ask.
Right.
So yeah, at the age of 20, I got baptized. I still went on a big search after that. And now I'm going to my husband's church, which is Presbyterian church. But yeah, I'm committed. I will feel comfortable in my religion one day. Comfortable in a way that I have enough knowledge. You know, like in Bitcoin, right. You can
be the pro.
Buying Bitcoin and be very uncomfortable with that. You have the conviction, but you still like every transaction is like fingers burning.
Yeah.
So
fingers burning. That's such a good way to put it.
Comfortable at church, but still, I have ways to go.
One more similarity between the Bitcoin journey and the Jesus journey.
Okay, for that, I have a thing. I learned the English language through Bitcoin. I became an adult through Bitcoin. Like I moved here at the age of 20 without fully realizing what my life is going to be like.
Totally.
It's going to be my passion. And then everything from there exploded through Bitcoin. My family, my career, like everything. So everything in life I see through a Bitcoin metaphor these days. Like when I talk about sovereignty and anarchy, I talk about it as it's a Bitcoin network. Like, sometimes we'll talk about family values again through Bitcoin things. And my husband's like, Katie, not everything has to be a Bitcoin metaphor. I'm like, but that's how I understand things. That's how things make sense. That was the first thing that made total sense in my life. So if I can just put pieces on it again, it works.
Yeah, it's kind of this objective truth thing. I do a similar thing. And I am terrible. I always bring things annoyingly to like a first perspective, like just, and it always comes back to Bitcoin and Jesus are the two ways. And I had a very similar, I think, experience and stories, not really diving into kind of the objectivity of the Bible until probably the last year or two. It's funny, it's actually a non-Christian that gave me the encouragement to read the Bible in a different way, which is, yeah, super cool. We were talking about, yeah, just a whole bunch of different like conspiracies and the age of the earth and like all this stuff. And then he was like, well, you're a Christian. Don't you know what it says in the Bible? And I was like, no, I guess not. Like, maybe I should read more about it. And since then, I've just been on this tear. And it's really difficult to disprove. One of the recent threads I've been pulling is the Noah's Ark thread. If you don't believe as an atheist, you have to agree that the book was actually written like ages ago. It was written long before science, long before, like, so we at least know that there's, if they're just stories and just fairy tales, we know they're written a long time ago. But if you read the measurements that are described in the book for Noah's Ark, you can like actually 3D print that now. And it's perfect. The boat can't capsize. The boat's massive. I think also in Austin somewhere, there's a museum where you can actually go and see a complete replica of the size and the pitch and the dimensions of that. And then even further, it actually resembles the Fibonacci formula. The way that the measurements are described in the Bible resemble, not quite perfectly, but really, really close to the Fibonacci formula, which we know today with all of our modern science and human excellence and all this stuff, we know today to be a perfect formula. Like they actually call it the God formula, I think. And so it's, really fascinating when you read this stuff and it's like, oh, wow, it's very tough to disprove the Bible.
I joined Bible study, women Bible study at my church. And I walk in on day one and they're like, nursery is available, so bring your kids. And I'm like, oh, okay, so I guess everybody's going to be my age. I walk in, and it's like the next youngest person is 65.
So there's no kids there.
Let's go. So, but they really appreciated my perspective because we talk about something and I'm like, that's Austrian economics.
Let's go. The Bible is full of Austrian economics.
And here I am explaining to them the scarcity, the supply. And they're like, oh, that's interesting.
Of Bitcoin?
I really appreciate it. Yeah.
Amazing. So you're orange pilling all the seniors at church at your Bible study.
Oh.
Fantastic. How do you go to church now? It's a Presbyterian church. I am terrible with the denominations. I don't actually align with... Talk to me about how do you define Presbyterian and then the difference between the Orthodox that you grew up in?
Well, see?
Okay. You're not sure.
No, I can tell you a few things. Well, the visible thing that you will see right away is we have... Orthodox has completely different calendar from Catholic. So our Easter is this Sunday. Well, our Easter, see?
Okay. How do you... Maybe I'll ask you after,
I'm still not there.
You're not sure.
So if like, I know that I still feel Orthodox because of, I associate myself with Russia a lot.
Mm.
This is what I got baptized in. But I do feel like I spent so much more time at Presbyterian church.
Mm.
And I actually find Presbyterian church the most libertarian kind of, in terms of people, especially like everybody's a Bitcoiner, see? Everybody was anti-COVID and all these things. But yeah, in Orthodox, we are celebrating Easter this Sunday.
Interesting.
Because in 1100s, 1054, there was a split regarding the calendars. And we went with, there was a fork.
Come on. You love to hear it.
Yep, there was a fork in calendars and we stuck with the old calendar. And for some reason, the rest of Christianity went to a new one.
Wow. I just had Scott Dietles. Do you know him? He just wrote a book called The Age of Time. And we talked a lot about time on our time together. And his theory is that time has been slowly becoming more and more centralized, coming back to more so on the minute. But I think it would also apply on the years and months. And have you looked into the ancient world, the 13 months and how the world makes a lot more sense on a 13-month regime, 4 weeks, perfect weeks. The month starts on Monday, starts on Sunday, ends on Saturday. It's also biblical. You look at even the back of a turtle shell and how there's 13 pieces there and how things just kind of naturally work better on this. And yet here we are with this janky 12-month plus a random day every 4 years.
Well, Americans measure things by foot and...
Yeah. The American measuring system doesn't make any sense to anyone. There's a great SNL skit about that, I think, where they talk about the differences in miles and stuff. Yeah. Just use random body parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then growing up Orthodox, moving now Presbyterian, are you finding, is it the same Jesus at those two groups?
I mean, the source code.
Sure.
Is the same.
Let's go.
But I recently saw this meme. It's like, a group is walking through desert and they're really like, they don't have water. They didn't eat for days. And then I get over the hill and there's a Disneyland.
Mm.
So that's kind of what you feel like when you go from Orthodox church to Presbyterian.
From the desert to Disneyland.
Because a lot of, like growing up, I was like, why are all these people unhappy at church? Because there's a lot of crying. There's like, for some reason, there's still this connection to suffering in the Orthodox religion. We do not celebrate being saved. We still suffer for Jesus. And that's what it feels like to me. But again, like I have major imposter syndrome when it comes to religion. I will spend the rest of my life learning. So please don't quote me on that. But that's what it felt like growing up in Orthodox country and occasionally going to the Orthodox church and then coming here. And it's like, everyone is happy.
Mm.
Sundays are celebrated.
Yeah.
We sing.
Right.
Because if you go to Orthodox church, it sounds like the kind of traditional psalms.
Okay.
Not the Judaism psalms necessarily. They don't sound the same, but they do sound like a lot of crying and...
Right, like lamenting.
Yeah.
Which, that's an interesting tension that I feel like the Bible does hold that interesting tension of, if you read, I'm deeply interested right now specifically in how should church look. I think the institutionalization of the church is atrocious. And I think that like lots of churches just launder money. There's a bunch of centralization that causes corruption. And like all the mega church scandals that are going on, I'm not surprised. And so I was talking to a buddy who's Catholic, and he was like, oh, well, the Catholic was the first church. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting thought. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, well, actually, I think the book of Acts describes the first church. So I read, which is like the book of Acts being like the one, right? It's kind of the book right after Jesus dies. And then his disciples are gathering together and starting to spread the good news. And so I read that book. And there's a lot of people that are suffering in that. Like the book of Acts ends with Paul just being in and out of jail all the time. and him being like, yep, I'm here. If I'm in jail today, I'm worshiping the Lord. And if I'm preaching to the synagogues and I'm worshiping the Lord, you know, you have Peter. And this doesn't say this in the Bible, but in the Gospel of Peter, like a sub-book, it actually says that he was crucified for his beliefs, but he was crucified upside down because he didn't feel worthy to be crucified or to be killed the same way as Jesus, which is like, yeah, I know. So it's like, okay, there's some suffering here that comes along with it. But then at the same time, you know, you see Jesus being baptized and it is celebratory. And like, you see the book of Acts, the people getting together celebrating, you know, the Jesus saving them and the crucifixion and all this stuff. And so I feel like if you never think about the suffering, it's probably like, read the book of Acts. It's just like, these guys are in and out of jail. They're in persecution. Jesus even says you will be persecuted. But then if you're never happy, it's also like, you know, you think God just built you to not be happy, and you think anyone's going to join the faith if you're walking around like a sad panda, just being like really a terrible human. There used to be that, you need to find that tension. And I feel like the same, you know, again, with the Bitcoin, there's that same kind of tension in the Bitcoin ecosystem, moving from, you have to sell, you know, never sell your Bitcoin, to like stack sats for your, like in the back of my shirt, stack sats for your last name. But then also, like, how do you live? What do you do? And I've, again, all the similarities is there. So, but anyways, as you move through your journey, your Jesus journey, if you will, which more than half your life has been spent now, at least pursuing in some way this faith, what have you found to be the most, like, how has it changed your worldview, or how has it changed any actions you've made? Or have you just been growing up in it, never changing, but always just kind of solidifying?
Yeah. So funny enough, I feel like my family is very much into biblical values.
Mm, without the Bible.
While being atheist.
Yeah.
So
why? Like, what's the, there's kind of a logic gap there. I feel if we're just, I had a friend tell me that he thinks we're just curious animals one time. And I was like, well, if that's the case, like, you know, what's with the morals?
I really don't know. I felt like this is a recipe for a happy family.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter how you call the recipe. That just works. And our family values were very strong from the very beginning. I'm super appreciative to my parents for that. We spent every free time of our family together doing something cool, like snowboarding together as a family. So my entire childhood, like 100 days a year, we would spend on a ski resort as a
wow.
Me, my sister.
Did that help for sailing?
Well, that's how I discovered sailing. I started snowboarding. The coach from snowboarding invited me to sailing. I was
no.
And that's how I got into sailing. So the entire winter I would be snowboarding, and then spring, fall, and summer I would be sailing.
What's that? I know we're way off of topic, but what's that market? How many young ladies are professional sailing in Russia? Because I've never heard of that until I met you.
Quite a lot. So sailing is actually really, really big.
Yes.
In Russia, it's very affordable. So it's not like sailing. It's like pay $6 a month for the bus to bring you to the sailing.
You have like some Hobie Cats.
Yeah.
I have one of those. I bought one. I've never used it. It's a little Hobie Cat. It's a 16-foot sail, and I wanted to learn. So maybe
you'll have an Olympic class, hobby kid.
Wow. You'll have to come to the lake and teach me to sail then.
I think there will be a Bitcoin sailing culture one day.
Whoa.
Big enough.
Maybe you'll pioneer it. Yeah. It'll be in Austin, probably.
But yeah, I started sailing at the age of 9. And of course, that's actually feeds into like sovereignty and independence. At the age of 11, I got into national team, and I started traveling with a national team. So at the age of 11, I would spend 4 months outside of my parents' house.
Alone or with them?
Well, with the coach and like a team.
Okay.
But again, we were all on low budget all the time.
Yeah.
It's not like you can go to a cafe and eat every day.
Right.
So we were cooking for our team. We were...
At 11?
Yeah.
Crazy. It's like almost military camp.
Yeah, it was pretty cool growing up in this really weird lifestyle. Like, I understand it was not norm. I was the only kid in class in school who didn't show up to school for at least 4 months a year.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, my sister's 5 years older.
And did she go through this similar?
Not well. She went to school. She was a straight A student.
Okay.
The first child, just like straight A's. Going to law school, the same law school my dad went to.
He's a lawyer. He's a lawyer. Okay.
Well, he turned entrepreneur like very early into his career, but he got a law degree. And then she's a pastry chef.
Wow. After law school.
Yep.
Okay. In Russia?
Yeah. Well, no. She's in Miami.
Okay. Interesting. And is she also a Bitcoiner? You're getting there.
Yeah. It's interesting how a barefoot shoemaker, like my own sister, she truly believes that I'm right, by the way. Like, she's convinced that I'm onto something. She knows that I'm right. She sees me thriving in life. And she's like, Katie, that's totally it. But I'm going to do it one step at a time.
I feel like you're calling her out right now. Yeah. Yeah, wow. And is she also, so you go to Sunday school, so you're 12, so she's 17. So you guys probably aren't like hanging out every day, but is she joining you at church or is she still?
She's in Miami, I'm in Austin.
Yeah, but I mean, like earlier.
Well, no. In Russia, absolutely no.
Okay.
And I don't think she went to church at all until I moved to Austin. And every time she comes, I take her to church.
Oh, interesting. But she wouldn't go otherwise.
No.
Does she think you're crazy there? Or does she know you're right there too?
Yeah, I think she knows that.
Yeah. It's tough to ignore the objectivity of it all. Interesting. So your husband's family is like full of Bitcoiners. But your family, what about your parents? Are they, have you orange pilled?
They trusted me.
Right. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So they're fine. They're in good shape with their.
I'd be very worried about them if they weren't.
I know.
They're in Russia right now. They're 60.
Yeah. The Russian economy is so interesting with all the sanctions. Even I think the whole world, the volatility of the world right now is so interesting. Seeing, you know, this weekend, like we're filming right now at BitBlock Boom, the weekend after Easter or before, depending on who you are. And I find it very interesting watching like Trump throw hands and the tweets and the, you know, we're going to nuke an entire civilization. Bitcoin pumps. There's a ceasefire. It's like, what is going on? The world is so, people have always accused Bitcoin of being this volatile asset. And I look at the world and I think it's always been pretty volatile. We've had this false illusion, this farce of stable money, which has just been propped up by government propaganda and maybe not unlike, you know, the Soviet Union, you know, post or a pre-split Russia. But how do you and your family, and then that obviously leads us into like flag theory and the Bitcoin stuff. Are you guys actively, like you and your family, pursuing passports and flags and different ways? Talk to me, because I'm interested in this in my, and then also as my wife prepares to give birth in a few months, I'm like, should we even get a birth certificate? Like, do we just completely take this kid out of the system? And then my wife, of course, with the logic is like, well, how would it travel? How would we like move together? And you realize you don't live in a free system. Like you are completely beholden. And I've got people telling me about how the birth certificate, there's some treaty in Canada and some chart of rights and like all this stuff and the taxes. And I don't have the time to research it, nor do I feel like I can. I'd love to
you research it. Somebody shows up on your doorstep.
Yeah, literally. Oh, okay. On that note, I have a crazy story about this, which is completely related but anecdotal. In our leadership meeting, we were talking about Canada being like a dumpster fire. And Canada, I think Canada will be the first state to fail. In like you watched Russia collapse, and this will be my kids. They'll be like, I used to live in Canada before it collapsed. I think that will be their story. And so we're actively, you know, not actively, but we're just exploring, you know, where would we go? And so we spend less than 10 minutes dreaming, oh, maybe the States, and we have a US corp, so it'd be easy to get visas and blah, blah, blah. Not 3 hours later, I open up Instagram at the end of the day, and there's an ad to bring Canadian founders down to America on a visa. I've never searched that. We literally talked about it on the leadership meeting, and that was it. There's the ad. So.
Well, to be fair, it would be very easy to bring your family to the U.S.
Yeah, no, I think it would. I'm also exploring different PR. I think PR cards are the play for me in the short term, because it feels like you can stack those up and there's little... Like a Mexican PR feels super easy, but I feel like I'm gatekeeping all of this knowledge. Talk to me about the flags and the birth certificates if you have any knowledge on that.
Yeah, well, first of all, my speech at the Big Boom is big plan B in the fourth turning. So just like you said, we've been going in cycles. Like that's a normal thing to go through different cycles of life as a nation state too, or as a society. So I'll touch more on that at Big Boom. But I grew up in Russia with a Russian passport, being on a Russian national team, and I was constantly denied visas. I would go to Europe.
Did you know why that was happening as a kid?
I think I had a special luck because the rest of the team would get visas and I would get denied.
Oh, really?
I'm not even kidding.
Because you went to church.
I think, like, you know, it was my way. I always bring up the Slumdog Millionaire movie.
Yeah.
His experiences led him to knowing the answer there. Well, me being constantly denied in visas made me the passport chick. Like, this is what brought me here. I was multiple times denied in Schengen visas. In the U.S. visa, I was denied once.
Oh.
I came back 3 weeks later. I was like, that was a mistake. I paid for language school. Let me in.
Wow. And so what would happen when you got visa denied? Like, you just could, turn around at the airport.
Yeah. Well, you apply like 3 weeks, 4 weeks before your trip. You apply
for
a visa. They get, and you have to have hotel paid, tickets paid, everything.
So you have to buy the refund insurance.
Well, yeah.
Oh, it's a scam. I knew it was a scam. It's all for the insurance money.
Yep. So that's how I always knew that, like, different papers have different values. Crazy. Somebody was the same passport book, like a similar one, just in different color, can cross those invisible lines, but I can't.
Yeah.
So it was already on the back of my mind growing up, just living through these experiences. And then again, I lived through two hyperinflations by the age of 20.
That's crazy.
Like, my experiences brought me to be a Bitcoiner, brought me to be into this flag theory. So we grew up with that. I'm not the only Russian who thinks it's important. Like, my parents totally see the value of residencies and citizenship. That's just given to every Russian.
Did you bring them into that mindset, or were they like, did you teach them about flag theory the same we taught them about Bitcoin, or did they already kind of know?
I taught them about the concept.
Okay, sure.
But again, every Russian has this thing on top of their mind. Oh, I wish I had
a
visa-free access to Europe. Yeah. I wish I had some residency somewhere else.
Do you have... Russia has to be one of the worst passports, eh?
Well, India.
Sure.
I mean, there's like completely bad ones. Afghanistan, Iran.
Yeah, Iran. Yeah, okay, that's true.
But then there's India, very, very few visa-free entries, and they can't have dual nationality. So the moment they get a second passport, they lose their Indian passport.
Interesting. Which would be a problem if their life, their livelihood, their job, everything is there.
So India made it somewhat easy to get the special residency program.
They have regime change there, right?
Nepal just did.
Okay.
Yeah. Also not a good passport.
Right.
But yeah, like everybody in those countries, they just want a residency somewhere else. They want easier access for travel. Like my parents, if any Russian has to go to El Salvador, like the easiest path would be Turkey, U.S., El Salvador.
That's the easy path. I think I got a bad out of Canada.
They can't really do that.
Because they can't get to the U.S.
visa. Yeah. So they have to fly to like UAE to Panama sometimes, or like Turkey to Panama and then El Salvador. So yeah, it's hard to find tickets even for these trips.
That's crazy. And even just entering for a flight doesn't make it happen.
Transit. No, America doesn't have transit visa.
Okay. Man, America is just so... Do you think, what is your take on America's supremacy? You know, this year, 250 years, I think, is it no nation has ever withstood 250 years? Is that the, do you know that stat, like, historically? I feel like there's some, do you guys know, is the...
Withstood in what way? Like as a
like power grade? Yeah, as a, like, no, I don't think there's been a nation that has held power for more than 250 years. And I think America's... fair play. But did Russia have like world dominance, like how
we did? Definitely.
Yeah. My world geography just needs work. That's where I need to go.
No, there were definitely...
But do you think, like, is
centuries,
is this nation, will it look the same in 50 years, or is it going to look different, do you think?
Who knows? At this point, I feel like we might go through such a significant change again, the fourth turning that we are part of right now. Usually at the end of it, the maps get redrawn quite a bit, and the power game board gets redrawn. I feel like America's definitely still going to be on the board, just solid resources there. But we'll see how the rest looks like.
Yeah. What do you think? What does the board revolve around, do you think?
I mean, sometimes I truly think it's just a mental power play.
Right.
Like, El Salvador is a tiny country, and somehow they got themselves on the board over the last 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, Bitcoin.
They don't have resources. They just got this confidence, and then they stacked upon this confidence.
And a good dictator. I feel like you can't do that in a democracy. None of his tactics work in a democracy. You know, human rights and all the cries of the democratic liberals are outraged with El Salvador, but the results are undeniable. And I feel like isn't that the story though of the world? Is, I mean, even the biblical story, I'll walk you through some ancient history. Do you know that in the Bible, the first God's original intent was no rulers, and they had no rulers for a period of time. And then they want a ruler. They're asking God for a king. And then God's literally, like, if you read the book of Kings, you can literally see them. God's like, no, like, kings will get corrupt. You don't want to be led by a man. Like, you know, we've got a pretty good system here. I've given you the rules. There is a group of decentralized people set to uphold the rules. Why do you want someone in the middle of this? And then he's like, fine, we'll give you a king. And then he puts in like King Saul. King Saul's great. He's an awesome dictator. And then he falls to greed and corruption and ends up getting possessed by a devil and a demon, and then like turns the whole nation into turmoil. And I feel like El Salvador's kind of looking this way. We've got this heroic dictator doing all the right things. And I personally, I'm just waiting for the crash. Maybe it comes in 15 years. Maybe the nation looks different and he pulled him out. But yeah, it feels like we're on a rat race, on a treadmill.
So I just watched the TV show King David.
Oh, on Prime?
Yeah.
So good. So really good. Yeah.
But literally by the end of the show, all I was thinking about Saul is, on a long enough horizon, everybody is a scammer.
100%. 100%.
Like, yep. That's exactly the story of Kings. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But I work a lot with El Salvador, like for the passport stuff. And I was like, yeah, he's totally calling all shots. And then I walked with immigration department and we were trying to like redraw some policies. And I was like, man, there's still so many checks and balances.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I kind of wish sometimes he would just be calling the shots. but still, I compare El Salvador as like moving on a startup.
Man. Okay.
And the rest of the world is a corporate.
Yeah.
It's like he's still like the CEO of a startup still has quite a bit of power.
Right.
But sometimes has to negotiate with other team members.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening. But only that's why startups move fast.
Yeah.
They're able to. They're able to call shots, try things. In a corporate, get this 17 layers approval and 4 years later, or different president again.
Yeah. Well, I feel like too, there's this, the flatter an organization, the less gets done, obviously. And governments are inherently just like super, super, super flat, without any clear leader in charge or anyone, even a clear mission. Like I feel like that was a big thing also with Bitcoin Well was, you know, shifting our mission to be, well, focused and dialed in. And governments just don't, they just don't have that. But I feel like, to his credit, Bukele has come in with a pretty clear mandate and a pretty clear mission to dictate his way through into, yeah. Would you say El Salvador is sovereign at this point?
Sovereign as a small nation can be.
Okay. Yeah. And they're, yeah, a small nation, but they're, I guess they have no resources to save. They have water. They have some tourism, but they...
Coffee.
They have good coffee. Let's go. But they don't have, like, there's no power there. I guess they have the volcanoes. Yeah. They've got the volcano power.
Talking about it, yeah, and hydropower they also talk about. So we'll see if that happens. But yeah, they got themselves a good name. They got themselves a good mission going. The people are full of hope. Which is pretty amazing.
It does feel like a nation on the rise.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I walk through El Salvador, you can feel the optimism in the air. You walk through downtown, any big city in Canada, you walk through, and I'm not sure what it's like here, but like the few times, like whenever I go to the States, I usually go to Disneyland. Yeah. And that's kind of it. So I'm a little bit sheltered, but walking through down big cities in Canada, it's atrocious. Yeah. It's everyone feels broke and hopeless. And, you know, I've only been to El Salvador a couple times, but you walk through there and it's like, people are smiling. People feel like the nation is being rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Does it take a moral collapse for nations to feel that way? Or is there, like, what, for Canada especially, what is the happy path out of this? Is it just accelerate to death and then rebuild? Or is there some kind of fixing?
For Canada, I don't know the answer. Mm. For El Salvador, I think people are just so happy to have their bases covered. Like, you know, the pyramid, Maslow pyramid.
Pyramid?
Pyramid of needs.
Okay. The eating?
The triangle of needs, whatever it's called. Yes, thank you.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So the base level is basically like food and safety.
Right.
They didn't have it.
Right.
For the last like 30 years. Mm-hmm. Safety was not a thing there. And just suddenly have that fixed. And realize, wait a second, I have so much more to life than just hiding in my house.
Wow.
Hoping that I have enough food tomorrow. And they're celebrating. The kids are back to school. Kids weren't going to school because that was too scary.
That's crazy.
Like, the boys wouldn't come back from their sixth grade because they would be, you know, hired to a gang.
Isn't it funny that we are celebrating kids getting to go back to school, and then you and I both are like, screw that school system. And what's the difference though? Like what, there is a fundamental, it's a different world. It is a completely different world. How do you talk to your clients and how do you talk to your people about this?
Well, so I talk about flag theory, the passports, the citizenship, the residences as a security model. And again, because many of my clients are Bitcoiners, I can make a comparison. Like, look, if you travel, you optimize for being able to cross borders with your Bitcoin. If you have kids and you're not in good health, you're optimizing for inheritance protocols, right? So you build out those custody systems for your particular goals and needs and considering the attack vectors, threats, etc. So you do the same with flag theory. So you're Canadian, you're thinking, okay, what's my biggest threat? Well, I'm running a Bitcoin company in a country that goes socialist.
Yeah.
So my family in particular can be targeted by nation state agencies. Canada itself going full socialist and you just not feeling comfortable raising your family there, that's more of a directional issue. And for that, you just would have to actually relocate. So, right. So for the first scenario I mentioned, you just need the second passport to be able to leave, to be able to have this second set of identity when they cancel your Canadian citizenship, when they revoke it, when you're
deemed unfit to be unworthy to be a citizen.
When they want to arrest you, but you're running.
Right. Okay.
And in the second scenario, it's just directionally, the country is not going the right way. I'm going to leave. Mm-hmm. And that's actual relocation that just requires residency. So based on those goals, needs, threats, attack vectors, we would customize like what makes sense, a second passport from this jurisdiction and a permanent residency or temporary residency in the third jurisdiction. And just like that, you're stacking flags, optimizing for different scenarios. That's what I've been doing for the last 8 years.
How do you have multiple passports?
Gentleman never asks.
Oh, wow. is that is that a is
How
it is that the same question? Like, which passports do you have? Like, that feels like a very different...
I feel like for me, it's because...
okay, so like for doxing and whatever else. But like for a random person on the street, like, would you feel comfortable... Not you, but like someone who's not, you know... People ask me, how much Bitcoin do you have all the time? And I have a similar response. And, you know, it's like, ah. But then, because I think, too, it's very uncommon to talk about how much money you have. But, and very societally correct. But citizenship feels somewhat less personal to an extent.
What's, maybe a little less. I think for public Bitcoiners, it shouldn't be less. Mm. Like, we should still be somewhat private about it. I mean, you don't get in trouble for not telling things. So sure. We're sitting here on a podcast sharing our entire lives.
I know. I see some of these Bitcoiners. We do our best not to share our kids' faces online. And part of me, but then I bring them to, like, my kids are always at Bitcoin events and where they're up and around. I mean, my son, he rocks the booth with Conrad and Carl on certain times. And it's yeah, it's kind of this weird, like, I want my kids to be involved. I don't want to raise a bunch of shut-ins that are petrified of the world. Like, I want to show them the world's not scary. I talk a lot about how scary my youngest, my four-year-old, my wife, we have these Tuttle Twins books. Have you gotten the Tuttle Twins? So good. And he's like reading. He can't read, obviously, but he's just going through the book and he's just like, the government is not going to do good things for you or something like this. Like, just like singing, like, la di da di da. My wife like texts me and she's like, you've got these kids sufficiently brainwashed. Like, they are 100%. And I was like, oh, good. They're learning young. But it's, you know, we talk a lot about this at our home. The realities of the world, if I think, is how I would describe that. But I don't want them to grow up thinking, oh, the world is too scary and I don't want to leave. I don't want to raise this. I don't want the next generation to be anxious and worried about what the future looks like. And how do you balance that with, you know, oh, your nation's in decline, you better get a new passport, run to this one. But then, like we just said, the kings are always going to be corrupt scammers. How do you balance that in your, you know, life?
I just don't put as much pressure on the jurisdiction. Like, I think that piece of a family life is easily changeable. Like, I've immigrated before.
Right.
That's doable. And I've immigrated with no money and no clear path how to legalize in this country at first. But now I have all this knowledge and we have safety in terms of finances. So immigration would be very easy for our family. And I feel like just centering things around what you want for your family internally will take care of the rest. Mm-hmm. Like, you can build a good tribe and good community in every country. You can build convenience and comfort for your family in every country. So let's just do the best we can for now. And we don't really have that, like, 10-year plan necessarily of where we live, how our day-to-day looks like. Not at all. I do also have a child with medical needs. So I have to I have to think about that quite a bit.
Does that almost, like, obsolete a bunch of countries, like, with medical needs? Would you go to El Salvador? Like, that?
So it's not like modern medicine medical needs necessarily. Okay. It's like, he has cerebral palsy.
Okay.
So he just needs constant therapy, etc. So
mostly, is that physical therapy mostly?
Mostly physical therapy. Yeah. But then, of course, optimizing the entire body for, like, mitochondrial healing and and, like, dietary things.
Are you guys going through that expecting an eventual recovery?
He will live a full life, very much.
Yeah, a full life meaning, like, walking and playing sports and...
In some way. I have a couple of visions in my head that, like, I know we will hit these milestones one day, and I just make a mental note to celebrate them like nothing else matters. Like,
right.
Going on a hike with him.
Yeah.
Definitely. And skiing together.
Okay.
So that are my two big goals that I know we'll get there.
Wow. And how are you... You said... optimizing the mitochondria and also physical therapy. So those two things, can they happen in any country at this point?
I can make them happen in any country. So those are, like, quite decentralized tools that, like, you can build a red light room anywhere. Right. You can get a red light sauna. You can bring hyperbaric chamber. Like, those are things that you can actually have in the house if you have to. So it's doable, but right now, we're still in the learning phase. Like, he's 4 years old. So we've been, for the last 2.5 years, that was probably, like, the main theme of my life. to learn as much as I possibly can, to optimize things for him, to encourage him, to make sure he's always happy and not in pain and all those things.
Is this your oldest?
Yeah.
Wow. So you, when did you sell Plan B? Was it 2 years ago?
A year ago, exactly.
A year ago. Okay. So a little bit more of a time gap. But the last decade has been quite like the immigration, meet your husband, get married, have a kid with, medical needs, sell business, have two more kids, and, run run the marketing at Citizen X. That's dynamite. What would you say, our kind of target demo here is really like next generation males is kind of who we're trying. I feel deeply passionate about the next generation. My generation won't be leading my kids. It will be the next, like my kids are going to inherit the world that the generation between me and my kids build. And so I feel deeply about talking to them and making sure that they build a good world so that my kids can, inherit a good world and make it better. What would you say is the thing that has prepared you the most? Like, what are you the happiest you did? And what do you wish you'd done sooner to prepare you to like rip that decade? Like that's a hardcore season of life.
Wouldn't have it any other way. So my parents raised me entrepreneurial. Like at the age of 9, I was.
What does that mean? Do you think?
Business.
Okay.
I would go to a music festival and sell those bracelets that shine like bright and dark.
Okay.
And I would.
You just show up with a plastic bag full of bracelets, and then
In mom's car there was like thousands more.
And where are you buying them? There's no Alibaba.
Chinese market.
Sure.
Like 3 hours away from our house.
Okay.
So
you go buy them for a buck and sell them for.
I'm 9. My sister's 14. We're like starting this business. We're going to this music festival on day one and selling them all. So we like put our savings together. We buy as much as we can. We get sell out like in the matter of 2 hours.
Come on.
And we're like, what do we do? We had this 2,700 rubles. Like we made good money.
How much is that in?
Well, it's
real money. Just kidding.
30, 40 bucks.
I was expecting an answer in sats, to be honest.
But, it was probably a full month's salary of a teacher at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're 9?
Yeah. So we were like, we have so much money, but what do we do? There are 2 more days of the festival.
Right.
So we're like, Dad, can you give us a ride to this Chinese market and back? And it's like 6 hours back and forth. He's like, what do I get out of it? I'm like, we'll buy you a fishing stick there.
Okay. Target market. Hey, you got to know your audience.
So we literally go to this Chinese market, buy him a fishing stick, and buy as much things as we can. Now we realize.
He made you buy him the fishing stick?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ballin'. That's like he definitely didn't need his 9-year-old daughter to buy him a fishing stick, hey? Really did not. But he made you do it. He made you feel the.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, that's
you
dope.
Promised that's a deal that,
right.
that we made. I drove you here and back.
Gotta pay your debts. That's good.
So after that, we come home and we have so much. And like, we didn't sleep last night because we were at the music festival. Then we drove for 3 hours there at 5 in the morning.
Okay.
Buy things to then drive back. So now we have like 4 more hours before the festival. Now we need to prepare everything, price things right. Because now we don't just have those bracelets. We also have like pants and all kinds of things. And we need like accounting. How do you do that? And then we realize we have so much, but we don't have enough hands. So now we call my mom's. She had a Home Depot store.
Mm-hmm.
She like that was her business. So we called the cashiers. And we're like, can you go with us tonight? We'll pay you that much money. Like, but you need to sell this. Like, come over to our house right now if you want to make extra back. So 2 of them come to our house. We like teach them the.
How old are these people?
30. Yeah, probably they were like.
If a 9-year-old called you right now, would you?
I mean.
If it was your boss's daughter, maybe?
Right now, yeah. I don't need this little.
Sure, fair play.
Paycheck at night. But I think if I called.
Yeah.
30-year-olds right now in Russia, like they'd be like, I'm in. Like I can make extra money. Yeah. So we teach them, we go out there. This is how I bought my first sailboat.
Wow. With
and
your music festival.
Money in this night. My sister went for a summer camp at the ocean. Like it was a really expensive trip. So that's how she spent money. And I bought a boat.
Crazy.
Because my sailing school just didn't have good enough boats to make good results. They were like training boats. I got myself a good plastic optimist. And the next year I was in the national team.
Okay. Do you think the boat did it?
It was big contribution. Yeah. Like the boats in my sailing school could not do that.
So why? And I don't know what your parents' economic status is or was, but like maybe I'm soft, but like I bought my son 3 sets of golf clubs over the last 4 years, right? Like, you know, even just like just this year, he got like a new set, and it's like whatever, all this fitting and all this, like it's crazy. How are you raising your kids? Like hearing that you had to buy your own sailboat as you're pursuing like what I would call a pretty legitimate sport in a legitimate way, your parents obviously paying for the lessons and the travel and all this stuff. Were they like, you have to buy your own boat, the school has enough? Or were they like, we just can't afford it? Or how does that come up?
I'm sure eventually they would buy me that boat.
Okay.
But me having the funds kind of prioritized.
Burning a hole in your pocket, like, so to speak?
That's clearly like, okay, we can't say no to that. Like, if she thinks it's time to buy a boat for better results and she has the funds.
Yeah, what are you going to say?
Girl,
yeah.
Go ahead, girl. But yeah, I would say we were growing up not in a well-off, but in a very comfortable family.
Okay.
Especially for a small town in Russia, we were very comfortable. Like, we had snowboards. That was like, who can afford a snowboard? That was kind of crazy. And in terms of my traveling, like, the state paid for most of it.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Because you were on the national team. Yeah. Is that why? Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to fundraise or do any of the... Wow.
I mean, right now with my like more life experience, I probably would, because we were still very limited in resources. And I feel like I would easily be at the Olympics if we had more funds, but we didn't.
Would that be something you'd want to do?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just signed up for a national championship.
Oh, really? Okay. Breaking news. Katie the Russian, the sailor.
My husband is like, is it your way of crushing out, like postpartum? Is it what you do?
Would you sail with the Russian flag?
Oh, well, so I wasn't able to for the last 5 years.
Right.
I applied for multiple competitions, but they wouldn't let me.
Because of the Russian?
Yeah, I was a Russian sailor officially, and like my world ID is Rus, EA, etc. But yeah, now we are unbanned. We're coming back to Olympics.
Okay.
Paralympics this year was the first time.
Why did the unban happen? Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Suddenly we're back.
But the war is...
Nothing changed.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it's just we are not the only one at war anymore. So
right.
We can't ban
right.
Israel. It's like, yeah. There is, so... let's not ban Russia.
Well, I guess there's a little bit of logic there, but... Yeah, okay. Interesting. So you're no longer banned. So you're gonna...
I'll compete. Like, I'll come back and I'll see how it works out with, you know, running a business, being a medical mom, homeschooling.
Yeah, yeah. And also an Olympic athlete. What is a pro? It's speed. It's got to be speed. Like you're running a course.
My particular class, it's a lot of logic. It's basically chess on the water, we call it.
Mm.
Because the strategy is way more important than the speed. You might actually try and go slower sometimes to mess with your opponent. Because we're doing it match racing, so one-on-one.
Oh, cool.
So you don't have to like go beyond 10 people. You have to just be ahead of this person 1 centimeter and you're good. And you just do it one-on-one with every single person. So it's a lot of rules involved. So you're trying to make this person take a penalty.
Oh.
So you're forcing them to get in a position where they're wrong and you can penalize them.
Okay.
So it's a lot of strategy. And like the first time I ran this particular class of boats, this particular match racing thing, I was like, this is it. This is what I always wanted. Fleet racing is cool. That's when 100 people go
in a straight line kind of thing.
Yeah. I always loved that. But when I tried match racing, I was like, this is exactly what I like.
Is it in a straight line or is it?
No, you go around the course.
Oh, there's a course. Okay, cool. Like a start and a finish line.
Yeah.
Kind of like F1, but one-on-one.
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm not going to sit here and say that I would, that I'm going to watch any match. But if you are racing, I will proudly cheer for Team Russia. I don't know if Canada has a sailing team. I will see. If you end up...
You guys are strong.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
The Canadian farm boys, they know how to do it. What are the best... So as someone... Canadian, and I should be careful about what I say, but I am actively pursuing a second passport right now because of some birthrights that I have. I mean, my last name will probably give it away, but where are the best nations to be like actually pursuing? And is it passport or is because from what I'm reading and understanding, PR is actually the play.
In some ways, PR will get you. PR is basically a bug out home, right?
Right.
So this is you will be able to come to this country, live there full time, do whatever you want. And eventually you will get naturalized. You will become a citizen if you live there long enough. Like for Mexico, first 3 years, you just have to show up every year. The last 2 years, you have to actually spend 180 days a year in the country. You
know, as a PR?
Naturalist. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In order to get passport.
Right. But why would you want, like the passport comes with, it looks like a tax liability and you can vote. Like those are the two benefits of passport?
What about crossing borders? You can't cross borders on a PR.
On a PR. Oh. Well, Canadian passport, I feel like, is probably going to be fine for crossing borders.
If we're considering, is it possible that they will target you specifically and your passport is going to not get you out of Canada, not get you across borders? Will Canada get involved in a geopolitical conflict and all male citizens between 18 and 60 can't leave the country like they are in Ukraine right now?
Because they want to go fight because they're drafting?
Yep.
Wow. 18 to 60? I thought, I'm like in my mid-30s. I thought I was kind of in the clear for this draft. I was worried about my kids, but that's wild.
Well, you're kind of in the clear because usually father of 3+ doesn't get drafted.
One more. Okay, you got it. You got to have kids. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Crazy. What's the play?
The very first thing we do is let's look into your and your wife's lineage. Mm. Are there any Polish, Czech, Slovak ancestors? French, let's look into that and see if we can just claim your grandparents' citizenship.
French, like France?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So let's just look into your lineage, see if you're eligible for any European citizenship. After that, we start running scenarios. Okay, what are the most plausible threats, attack vectors? Is it a passport or is it residency that you need? If it's a passport, are we trying to get a strong passport or we just want a passport shared among all family members just so you can cross borders when your Canadian passport gets revoked, when Canada gets into geopolitical conflict, when the country falls, like all things like that. Well, if we just want a plan B passport that is cheap, quick and easy, let's get $100,000 African passport for the entire family.
African.
Specifically, Sao Tome and Principe. It's a Portuguese-speaking island off of west coast of Africa.
Huh. Is that where you're sending lots of clients right now?
Clients with strong passports, like strong original passports, like Americans and Canadians really like this option because they have a second set of documents. It costs them $100,000 for the entire family.
Like six, you know, I got six, almost seven.
For you, it's going to be like 120 maybe.
Okay. Like, so 120 USD, just pay to play kind of thing. Is this like the Trump card? They got the $1 million.
Pretty similar, but the paperwork is still quite a bit. So there will be like solid due diligence, source of funds, proof of funds, police clearance certificates, etc. Like every immigration involves that. So it's still that, but you accelerate the timeline from like 6 years in Mexico to 6 months with Sao Tome.
Interesting. And why would, like as someone who's Canadian, you know, most, maybe Canadian American, you mentioned that European, is there a European passport that we can get via lineage? That's because most people are from Europe or is it, okay. Like plus Europe, the EU passport doesn't seem particularly, like I think Europe is on the same verge of collapse as Canada and the EU. I actually think Canada.
All countries, but some.
Yeah. But the EU as a whole, like Brexit kind of is the canary in the coal mine, I think. And the EU is going to be, like my kids won't grow up in an EU
I think
world.
I gave it 9 years. We were running predictions in the industry.
Okay.
And I think I said 2034 is the fall of EU. So
okay. What do you think? What's the prophecy here? What does that look like?
Feels right. Like with everything I'm seeing with their citizenship law, their immigration, their socialist agenda, I think 10 years is a little too optimistic. So 9 it is.
Fair play. And so what is that? What does the EU become? Does it get assumed? Does Trump get a third term and just go nuts?
Yeah, I feel like it's just going to be the fall of the EU as a union. There will be a new institutions that will come out of it. So I feel like we know that Germany and France and Italy are carrying a lot of other European countries that don't carry their weight. Mm-hmm. So they will probably drop them. And like, you know, we talk about Pribaltica, which is Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. They hate Russia. Wow. They used to be USSR.
Right.
So, like, even, what, 40 years later, they still hate Russia.
When you say they, you, like, is it the propaganda in the school? Like, how does a citizen...
Very strong.
How does a 20-year-old who's 40 years removed from USSR grow up hating Russia because of something that happened half a century ago?
Grandparents talk at dinner?
Sure, yeah. Just propaganda. Just
like natural propaganda. Yeah, yeah. Not even active government trying to say you hate...
It's the propaganda that I give to my kids, which is like, government's going to harm you.
Like, it takes two generations to kind of clear up the certain propaganda, I feel like. So, and by generations, I mean actually like family lines.
Right.
30 years apart or so. Yeah, and they hate Russia. But, well, after the fall of EU, I feel like there will be some really hard feelings between some of the EU countries. New institutions will show up. Yeah, like institutions in terms of few nation states organizing for maybe better military, better trade, but it will be different.
Yeah. Are you watching the Alberta, the split kind of thing? It's really interesting time right now. Same kind of thing. It's like the Alberta's carrying most of the weight for Canada. And now there's this, and we're sitting in the room with a Quebecer who's been trying to do this for 20 years, but has been unsuccessful. What do you feel like the likelihood is? Like, I'm an Alberta citizen. That's where my PR, my primary residence is. And as someone who's in Alberta, you know, I hear both sides of this, and I can't get over how the two sides are just, it's like they're reading from different books. It's like they're reading from...
This is exactly the definition of the fourth turning. Mm-hmm. Like, the parties are so far apart they can't hear each other.
Yeah.
Like, this is the definition of the nation state or civilization in crisis. And that's how strongly we see, like, so many things you mentioned today are part of my Bibbloom speech of, like, recognizing where we stand and what's next. So, yeah, the next step is the high. So that's great.
Right.
After the crisis comes the high. Yeah, we are.
Like the strong men make weak times make, or yeah, whatever. The strong men, weak time cycle.
Yeah, well, this one is a four cycle, and it's a high, unraveling, awakening, unraveling, and a crisis. So we are in a crisis right now. We are getting to the culmination of all that.
You think we're already in crisis?
Oh,
to me, it feels like a week. So what did you say? It says
a high. So think of America in 1950s.
Okay. Pre-1971. So, like, just before.
Exactly. Yeah. That's literally the timeline of the high.
Yeah.
And then the crisis officially started with 2008 collapse.
Okay. Okay. So we're kind of like a 60-year cycle. Yeah. So you'd mark 1950 as the high.
High.
Yeah.
And usually takes like 80 to 100 years to come back to the high.
So then 71 being the unraveling. And then the awakening being like
90s.
Right. Like, yeah. Or like the, you know, maybe 9/11 kind of like era. And then crisis is 08. And then now we're building back to high, you would say. Okay. Okay. Yep. Interesting. And does this work on the macro and the micro? Like, does that work in Alberta? Or does the US geopolitical just affect everyone so broadly that it kind of just is throughout the whole world?
The Western world, definitely on this timeline. And then I would say Russia is currently being squeezed to get out of the fourth turning earlier than others.
Out of the fourth turning, meaning exiting the crisis and into the high.
High earlier than others. Like, basically, if you're forced to hit the bottom earlier, you will recover earlier.
Accelerate!
And you know, Max Kaiser always says, El Salvador is the first country out of the fourth turning because they did hit the bottom earlier than others.
True.
They were on the US dollar standard for last, 30 years because their currency collapsed. They don't have access to the money printer, so
yeah,
they were like at
they hit rock bottom
like we are.
Yeah But why didn't that work in like Venezuela hit crisis even before 08, I would say. Like,
there might be somebody else involved.
Okay, just socialism and governments.
No, I think like other governments also suppressing some countries.
Oh, like you think like the oil, you figure it's like the Saudi.
That's okay. Definitely a big play always. Yeah. Well, energy is always a big play.
Yeah.
So yeah, El Salvador might be the first country out of all of that.
Man, the perfect storm, hey?
Hi.
Yeah, well, yeah, big time. And interesting that they have enough resources to maybe be sustainable, but not so many that they're an attractive target like Venezuela. And that's one thing that I worry about for Alberta. Like, as Alberta, you know, pursues separation, there's a chance that, well, we're in this transition period before, you know, I can't imagine we'd split before there's official deal with the US. Like, I imagine the end result here is, assuming it goes through, we get some kind of U.S. military protection, and then and even port access.
Sounds like Russia, Ukraine.
Right. Yes, it does. It sounds very similar. Hopefully, without the war, though. Yeah. But yeah. But I, you know, there's a chance that our independence gets lost in that military protection changeover, regime change, if you will. And Alberta is an incredibly, we have more oil than, I think we're number two in the world. Like, we have so much oil. The fact, I can't remember, were we in Dubai together? Were you in Abu Dhabi this year? Oh, I feel like I remember it was the golf tournament last year. But being in Abu Dhabi and seeing the level of wealth that is there and prosperity that exists there, and then going back to downtown Edmonton, like, and seeing just the sheer level of poverty, and knowing that under the surface Alberta has more energy wealth, is it's sickening. Like, it makes my blood boil, that level of disparity. Yeah. And but we're very attractive for foreign governments to start coming in and maybe, you know, taking a piece of the pie. What do you think Alberta has to do to protect itself there?
Have strong hands. I know, kick, because the free market is at play in this point, right?
Yeah, totally.
If they want to come in and buy off your land and you sell, then yeah, it's gonna play out this way. So it's kind of principle, and not being in a position to have to sell.
Hmm. Sell, like, you mean as a country?
Like, to foreign investors, because it doesn't come like, oh, I'm a foreign government, I'm gonna come and buy you. It's just foreign investment funds come in and start chipping in.
Do you think they do that on behalf of the state, or do you think they're doing that just as a free market?
Just naturally, like half of Toronto owned by Chinese investors.
Totally. And Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so do you think, though,
they naturally just want piece of it because they think,
like, the individual citizens.
Yeah.
The individual citizens want, of course, the Canadian real estate. But and then I mean, the PPC owns the citizens, you figure. And so the PPC has the ability to just come in and, like, take that.
But the citizens see it as their hedge.
Yeah.
For them, it's like a potential exit strategy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So the state may be able to get some of these resources if the citizens make mistakes and open themselves up for the scrubs.
I see. So, wow. So the level of vetting required on foreign citizens is actually quite quite important then.
Yeah.
Interesting. I want to wrap here right away, but I want to ask something, one last thing maybe. As you've gone through accomplishing so much, what is one thing that's kind of changed your mind through the last little bit? It seems like you've been maybe on a consistent path for the last 20 years of your life. You know, grew up in church, slowly getting closer to the truth. No, I'm just kidding about the... But then, like, Bitcoiner from day one, like, you know, flag theory, like, you're kind of on this maybe up trajectory. Is there anything where you've drastically shifted your mindset or thoughts?
I mean, yeah, I've been humbled not once with motherhood.
Mm.
It's like, there are many things that ended up being much easier in motherhood. Like, I always thought, well, people are struggling keeping their kids on a good diet. Maybe it's hard. Like, I'll try my best.
Right.
That's not hard.
Yeah, you realize it's just habits. It's
yes. Yeah. Like, they have nothing else to eat.
You mean the Fruit Loops don't just fall into their mouths? Exactly.
So that's been actually much easier. But, like, the medical system, right? I was so into holistic things. And then I'm having this life-altering event. A child with medical needs. And it's like, well, Katie, here are your principles.
Right. Gone.
Go schedule the 17 appointments with doctors.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, your insurance is kind of helpful.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. All the stuff that we poo-poo as Bitcoiners is all of a sudden like, oh, thank goodness it's here.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience. I actually have, we vaccinated our first two kids, not knowing really all the COVID, like, really opened all that. And one of my kids is vaccine injured. She was, like, dramatically, yeah, vaccine injured, like, almost lost her whole intestine, the whole bit. And so simultaneously, which, you know, I'm thankful was our second kid, and that we were able to do some research and understand kind of what the danger. And then COVID just, like, completely flipped the switch on that. I think anyone that's not investigating that is just, like, ignorant at this point. But the medical system, it's like somehow created this great problem with lies, but then also simultaneously fixed the issue. And I was, like, so upset and so thankful all in the same breath. And it is, you're right. It's just humbling. How has that, so you have this with your first kid, how has that changed with your second and third?
Maybe not have like this crazy expectations on your kid.
Sure.
Like try your best, but like he was 4 months old. I was researching ice hockey rings.
Perfect. And then it's going to the NHL. Alex Ovechkin, number two.
And then a few months later, I'm like, wait, is he going to be able to walk ever?
Wow.
See, like this kind of switch hits you hard, and now you understand that I'm just going to try and do my best, like the best I can, and I'm just going to put one foot ahead the next one and see where I can get.
And how do you and your husband anyways define best? How do you strive for, like, what does best mean to you guys?
I mean, strong marriage.
Yeah.
Till we die. That's probably, honestly.
Is that a biblical thing or is that just like a personal thing, would you say?
I'd say for me, it was still a personal thing.
Yeah. Like
growing up atheist in an atheistic family, this was always like, this is very important.
Man, that's so crazy.
Yeah. But honestly, I just feel like if you get this right, you have such a high chance of success in life.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, like you will die happy. And if you don't, it will be very hard to achieve that happiness. Like I'm looking at my otherwise successful friends who got divorced and I'm like, there's nothing they can do to fix that.
Yeah.
They can't find the next partner because they had three kids with the first one. Like it's just not going to be ever the same. The dynamic is so different. You will never build that back the same way. So it's like a mistake that you can't undo. So just strong marriage is the foundation of everything.
What do you think? So what drives that then? As I wholeheartedly believe this and agree, and something I'm striving for constantly, you know, as the, like, I feel like I get to talk to the other like side of the, yeah, of the aisle here. What does that mean?
Like, why do I think that?
No, not why. How do you create strong marriage, would you say?
I mean, you just find a cool husband and
I didn't rest as easy. Yeah. Find a core developer and marry him. It's pretty simple.
I mean, no, I truly understand that it's not easy, but we're only been married for 5 years and
sure,
it feels very easy now. Mm. Like there's not a question there. There's doesn't feel like there's wrong dynamic. There's wrong direction at all. But I've seen families spend together 15 years and then get divorced. And it's,
yeah,
like you just always have to keep that in the back of your mind that like this is the most important thing. Just you got to keep that running. Figure out what's going on early. Run your KPIs.
Run your KPIs.
Yeah. And
do you guys have like a weekly, monthly, yearly process or anything? Or what do you guys do for the home?
We are very different in the way we think. Like my husband covers bases very well. Like he recognizes patterns in a very major macro ways. And I actually run like gajillion tabs and
right, like
every single little things, try to recognize pattern on those. And sometimes I'll like bring the issue to the plate. And he's like, this is not an issue because this and this and the overall picture is pretty good.
And you trust that enough, or do you ever like? Do you guys like go back and forth
we'll
on that?
Go back and forth.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I like to talk, and he entertains me.
Fair play, good for him.
Yeah. So that's basically it. And then I feel I always have this like small little things that if it's a check that it's a show that things are good. So I really want to go for family dinners to my husband's parents, like my in-laws. I want to spend time with them. I want them to come to our house to play with the kids. Like, I want them to be involved. And I always think, if my kids want me to be involved like this, like, that's a good sign.
Right.
Because I really was rooting for them to move to Austin. I was like, look at this house. How about this house?
Your parents or your in-laws?
My in-laws.
Okay. Where are they?
They were in Dallas and now they're in Austin.
Oh, okay. Okay.
A mile away.
You did it.
Yep. And I really wanted this to happen. And I was thinking, I hope they take it as a compliment because it really is. Like, I want them nearby. I want them involved because they're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want my kids to like potentially want me to live in the same town as they do once they get married and start having kids. And like, I want to be involved. And if that's the case, then we probably did good.
what are you going to do? Like, I mean, look at your parents living literally halfway across the world. Like, you guys, can you guys even talk on the phone?
All the time.
Yeah, but like the time zone is...
Well, every morning and every night I can talk to them.
Oh, okay. Is that the difference? 12 hours? Is it kind of... Okay.
11.
Okay, okay.
But recently, Russia's been shutting down Telegram, FaceTime.
Oh, really?
WhatsApp.
From the war? Or what's the reason?
I don't know. There's like not mobile internet in Moscow anymore because like they're afraid that we're being, you know, audited by the rest of the world all the time.
Crazy. So even Starlink, like telecom.
Starlink doesn't work in Russia. They didn't cover Russia yet.
Oh, really?
So it's like, it's been literally scary. To
Man, decentralized tech being centralized just sucks, hey? Yeah. Like satellites should be pretty like borderless.
Yeah, true. Like,
sure.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
I think it might have worked, but officially they didn't launch service in Russia yet.
Mm.
But yeah, it's been like a little scary to, at what point am I cut out from communication with my parents? Like right now.
And what are they doing there?
All the time.
Like, they're in their 60s.
Exactly.
What's their grandkids are here. It feels like both their kids parents. Are here. Like, oh, their parents are there. Okay.
Yeah, my grandpa is alive and well, thankfully.
So where does that line cross for, you'd want to follow your, like, yeah.
Well, so they used to come to the US for like 3-5 months a year to hang out with us.
Okay.
But then the war started, their visas got denied like 4 times now.
Wow.
So that's why my husband and I, we meet them in different countries.
Go to El Salvador or whatever.
Europe, El Salvador, yeah. We just, we spend like a month together every year somewhere else.
Crazy. Yeah, it's the family dynamic, the more that I'm talking to more people, I'm so thankful like this show gives me opportunity to sit down. Like we would have never had this conversation, I don't think, if it wasn't on camera. Unfortunately, because it's such a, I find it so interesting, but having the ability to look into the way the world works and the way that different people who, like, I think our values are probably really close, really similar. We probably align on many different things. And yet our families and our struggles and our challenges are so different. Yeah, it's just so cool. The world is such an interesting spot. So probably a good spot to wrap. Thank you so much. Any final last words before we shut her down?
No, do the best you can. You'll get humbled, but so worth the fight. And life is beautiful.
There you go. Okay, thanks, Katie.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for watching the conversation with Katie. As you can tell, it was a few months ago was when we were in Texas for BitBlock Boom. Truly, I never know where these conversations are going to go. And I'm always so surprised at where we end up. I filmed a host of other episodes in Fort Worth when I was there. And so definitely stick around, subscribe to the channel if you aren't already, and check them out. If those of you that don't know, my name is Adam O'Brien. I'm the founder and CEO of Bitcoin Well. We are on a mission to enable independence. Mission to enable independence. We do that by making it easy to buy and sell real Bitcoin directly to your personal Bitcoin wallet. We do that by making it easy to buy and sell real Bitcoin directly with your personal Bitcoin wallet. This is real Bitcoin on the blockchain where you own and control it. It's called self-custody. If any of that interests you, please go to bitcoinwell.com. Above all else, though, I am a follower of Jesus. I am a husband to my beautiful wife who has given me 4 and almost 5 amazing kids. If any of that interests you, please subscribe. Let's keep pursuing objective truth.